I'm Owen Brooks, and I'm the research historian from Smith Robertson Museum and Cultural Center in Jackson, Mississippi. And we're in the process of doing a civil rights exhibition for the museum, and part of that is the oral history project that I am currently working on. And I have with me this afternoon Ms. Nancy Rose Bartow. And she has agreed to allow me to interview her. Is that right, Ms. Bartow?
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Bartow, would you begin by helping us understand who you are, where you were born, where, when, something about your background, your parents, and their background, if you would?
Okay. I was born in Detroit, Michigan on August 22nd, 1933. The youngest of three children. My mother was born in Malta, but she was raised in India and Scotland and came to America.
And what is your mother's name?
Elizabeth? Stewart Robb, R-O-B-B, Sparrow, S-P-A-R-R-O-W.
Sparrow.
She came to Nova Scotia working on in service for a doctor.
And you said she was born in Malta?
Born in Malta. Because my grandfather was in the British Army.
Oh.
In the Scotch Army. Scottish Army.
Came to Nova Scotia when? You remember?
Oh, no, I don't remember.
Okay, that's all
she
right.
She was 42 when I was born. So
mm-hmm.
Probably in the 20s.
After how about your father?
My father was born in Sydney, Australia.
Okay, what is his name?
His full name is James Percy Aloysius Chambly Sparrow.
We can just call
him James P. Sparrow.
S-P-A-R-O-W. James P. Sparrow. Okay, and he was born in Australia?
Australia. His mother was Welsh from Wales, and his father was from London.
Mm-hmm.
And his father died when he was young, and he was raised in London.
He was raised in London?
Raised in London. Came to this country after the First World War. He was in the First World War in the Canadian Army, in the cavalry. I never say that right. Cavalry, not the cavalry.
Cavalry?
Yes. And he was he was in the battlefront in France. He was
in the Second World War?
First World War.
Your father?
My father.
Okay.
And she always told me he thought it was going to be the last war.
Oh, ho.
Okay.
So?
He went to law school but had to drop out during the Depression and was an accountant.
Became an accountant?
Became an accountant.
Okay, go ahead. What about your sisters and brothers?
My sister...
Older or younger?
Older.
Everybody's older than you, right?
My sister's 8 years older, my brother's 6 years older.
Mm-hmm.
My brother's an attorney.
Sister's name?
Patricia.
Patricia. Okay.
My brother's name is David.
All the children born in Detroit?
Mm-hmm.
David was how much older than you?
6 years old.
6 years. Okay. All right, so you went to school in Detroit, right?
Elementary.
You were born in Detroit, right?
Born in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Elementary school?
Mm-hmm.
High school?
Mm-hmm.
When did you graduate high school?
1951.
Okay, graduated 1951. Okay. And how was Detroit during those days?
Detroit, for me and I was growing up, was very good.
It was good?
It was good. It was
you enjoyed good. Your...
enjoyed very much.
Your early life?
My early life. politically, what was going on? My father was very active in the church.
Okay.
The Episcopal Church.
The Episcopal Church.
I was very active in Girl Scouts. And I studied in college.
He made you all go to the Episcopal Church?
Mm-hmm.
You all grew up in the Episcopal
Church. So we were old enough to make up our own minds, which my father said was 21.
Uh-huh.
When you're 21, you can do what you want to do.
Right.
And then I went to the Unitarian Church.
Oh, you went to the Unitarian Church. What? It's none of my business. I thought maybe it might be a story behind that.
Well, I was a dancer. I was studying dance in college, mm-hmm. and they included dance in the church service.
So that attracted you?
That attracted me. And they had a good theater group, which I was part of.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. That was more progressive.
And more progressive.
At that age, I thought it was more progressive.
All right. Okay. All right, what happened?
What happened?
Yeah. You went to college where?
I went to college. Wayne State University.
Wayne State. Where else? Wayne State College. What'd you major in college?
I wanted to major in dance, but they didn't have a dance major at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I what classes I wanted to take so I could continue dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not graduate from Wayne State.
Okay. All right.
I came to New York to study professionally. And I also taught dance in Detroit.
You taught dance? Oh, okay. That's important. Taught dance in Detroit. Good. And you came to New York when?
1958 to live and stay.
Alright. 1958.
At which time I got a job as a counselor at St. Barnabas House, which was a home for neglected and abandoned children.
You were a counselor?
I was a counselor.
Okay.
It's run by the Episcopalian Mission Society.
Yes, I thought it was. Abandoned children?
Mm-hmm. Neglected and abandoned.
Mm-hmm. Okay, did you enjoy that work?
Yes, I did.
Did that how long?
I did that for about a year and a half. And then I got married. Do you want to know? Does it matter?
Sure it matters.
Oh, to Len Chandler.
Matters to you, doesn't it?
To Len Chandler.
It matters to you.
Yeah. I got married to Len Chandler.
Yes, I heard of him.
He was a folk singer.
Yes, I remember. Very good.
And
so this was in New York?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. In 1958 we got married. 58, 59,
58. Okay. And?
And during that time I was still studying dance, and I also studied weaving, which I'd always been interested in, because I knew how to sew and do things my mother made. All of our clothes when we were young. And
oh, your mom did?
My mom did. So I learned how to do things like that. And Len had an interest in my making him things out of leather. That's how I got involved in leather.
Oh.
So, could you make me a bag since you know how to sew and you have a sewing machine?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure. And then I made a guitar case. And
were you trained or
no,
you
just
picked it up?
I looked up leather in the Yellow Pages.
No.
Yes. It was on Spruce Street and I went and bought some leather and I had a sewing machine.
I don't believe it. That's how you did it.
That's how I did it. And then I said, I could really do this. This is pretty good. So then I said, Len said, well, there were people in the village, one of the people that Barbara had worked for, and he went and said, my wife would really like to learn how to do this more. Could you hire her as an apprentice? And he said, no, I don't want to work with any women. And he said, no, she'll be okay. And the man said no. So I found Barbara. That's how I met Barbara.
That's how you found Barbara.
Said, I showed her what I had done.
Mm-hmm.
And She asked me if I'd like to, I asked if I could come and apprentice with her, and I did.
Uh-huh.
So that's where I learned sandal making and belt making, everything that she
did. Barbara already knew how.
She already knew how.
And so she taught you.
She taught me more than I had been just doing it, teaching myself it. She taught me, refined my techniques.
Uh-huh.
So then the 60s came, and Len went south, and
who?
My husband went south for a conference in Atlanta and hooked up with the Freedom Singers,
mm-hmm.
and came back, and then that was the summer of 63, actually.
Okay. Were you at all involved politically prior to that
time? Yes, very politically. In Detroit, I was involved with the NAACP and the Urban League, and my father was always involved in politics and elections. He took me to hear Adlai Stevenson. We supported Wallace when he was running, not George Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
Henry Wallace during those
years. That's who I knew. I knew Milton Henry.
Milton Henry was.
Yeah, the lawyer.
Right.
We were in the Wallace campaign.
In the Henry Wallace.
1948. Yeah.
I was still, I was just entering high school then. But my father would take me to things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember an incident in Detroit once. Paul Robeson was denied singing at the Masonic Temple, the Scottish Rite Cathedral, and they said he had to appear at the Madison Ballroom, which is just this funky little place we used to go dancing in Detroit. But that was the only place that would let him appear, so I said I wanted to go. My father said, no, you can't go, because it's too dangerous. He said, you can't go. They're, you know, the FBI and some of his friends that were in the unions were having problems. So I went there, and I ran into all these friends, the family. So I said, I can't go home, because they... So I went home, and I said, why did you tell me I couldn't go? It was Paul Robeson's 57th birthday.
Oh,
and what a wonderful occasion this was.
Did you get it?
I was fabulous. Yeah. I was so impressed. I'd never heard him sing. And I said, and plus I saw ran into all these people, so you're going to know I went there anyway. But I told them what an experience that was.
And then? Where you came back to New York?
I came back to New York, and I traveled all over with Len in the early 60s. When he was just traveling around the country singing. And then in 64, he was traveling pretty much in the South doing voter registration. I had a job here working for a doctor. It was just a secretarial job. And I took a vacation and I went down to Mississippi with the National Council of Churches.
You did?
And I was there answering the phone.
What year was that?
64.
Okay. And the Delta Ministry?
I'm not sure.
Where were you?
Weeks.
Where'd you go?
In the main office in Jackson, where the calls would come in from on the watch line.
Oh, okay. That was the COFO office, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't the COFO office. That was another office. This was on the second floor of the country.
Okay.
And it wasn't for that long. And then I traveled around the state with the committee for Medical Committee for Human Rights, doing surveys to see what medical conditions were and what was available to people. And also in New York, we did voter registration in the community. So I've always been involved in political things in that way. In 65, when the Poor People's Corporation started, there was a meeting in New York asking for craftsmen and people that would be interested in going south and training people.
Who recruited you?
It was at a general meeting. There were a lot of people there. Ellen Maslow, maybe.
Oh, I remember.
You know, and that's where I met Jesse when I got down to Mississippi. But I volunteered, and I got some supplies together. I gathered some tools that I had and got some things from Barbara, and flew down to Mount Beulah, to the college. So this year, I forget the name of the college, and set up a workshop.
Southern Christian Institute.
Set up a workshop, and people would come from... A group came from Milestone, was my first group, then a group came from Natchez, and then from Macomb. And then later, this was a very brief training period, you understand?
That's like right.
Just an initial training period. And then the people went to a meeting, and the whole concept of the co-op and the Poor People's Corporation was explained to people. I think the dues was 25 cents per person a year, and that they could borrow money from the Poor People's Corporation to set up a workshop and with the people that were training in different areas, there were sewing co-ops and other co-ops. That we were
surprised.
Were you aware
of the Federation doing at that time?
Yes, well, there was...
Did you hear McKnight speak of Beulah that time? Father McKnight?
I don't remember the name, but more than likely he did.
Okay. So he is accredited.
I know there were farm co-ops.
The reviving of the Federation, or the organizing of the Federation, Southern Federation of co-ops, right?
And somehow I got this raggedy truck.
You got a raggedy truck.
And each co-op, I guess they were awarded or given $100 or maybe $150 or $200. Anyway, I had this amount of money. I drove back to New York from Mississippi with whoever needed a ride. In those days, you know, if you had wheels and you were going, people were always riding with you. So I drove some folks back to New York with the money that I had got. This thing called there this time. And then I convinced Barbara to come back with me. And this is crazy. My husband was singing in Atlanta, so we drove to Atlanta, dropped him off in Atlanta. I think Bob Fletcher rode the rest of the way to Mississippi with us. Then we distributed all these supplies to the different areas. And Jesse decided that Barbara should go to Milestone. And that I should go to Macomb.
Oh, you went to Macomb?
And I went to Macomb and set up the workshop there.
Oh. Was Harry there?
Harry?
Harry Boyd.
Yes. I stayed briefly at his home.
You stayed at his home?
For a little while. Is he still there?
Yeah. Not in good shape.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he has kidney problems. He's on dialysis.
Oh, okay. I'm glad they have dialysis in Mississippi.
What did you say?
Glad they have dialysis.
Nice going.
No, but years ago they didn't die.
Yeah, well, that's true. But years ago, dialysis wasn't popular at all. Anyway.
No.
Yeah, but yeah, they got dialysis.
I
oh, yes. And Harry's
two friends
right
on
there.
Dialysis now. But
huh?
And I have a neighbor and two friends that are on dialysis.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's a rough go.
Hmm?
It's rough.
Oh, it is, very. Oh, yeah, very. Harry had to take Harry off the road.
But
it's
the alternative, that's my friend person.
Harry can't hardly see. He doesn't preach. He's tired. When last you talked to him? Been a long time?
I haven't seen or heard from him in 40 years.
Oh,
jeez. I haven't got in touch with him.
Oh, okay. All right, Nancy Rose.
Okay, then after all these training sessions, and as Jesse has probably told you, or people have told you, the Poor People's Corporation, getting started with the workshops and the produce.
You knew Doris Derby and all
that
stuff?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And we had the warehouse in Jackson and Liberty House here. And there were problems, and I would go back on occasion to help the co-ops if they were having a problem.
Right.
I think in looking back at that time, I think we were all totally, it was a wonderful idea. We were very idealistic. But to make it work, we didn't have the overall picture and everything in place, the quality control, who was going to hire, you know, get supplies, who was going to mail things out, the quality. We had to pay the people in New York that we bought leather from. You know, they were just problems, like running a small business. Except if it was just one isolated place, and you just had one thing, it might have worked a little easier. You understand what I mean? Goods were shipped directly there, and the produce was shipped out. But it was overwhelming, I think. But I think it was the co-op idea that was a wonderful concept. And
well, there was nothing new about co-op.
No.
And
they worked, the co-ops worked years ago in England. They had the Rochdale co-op, housing co-op. I mean, there was a co-op other than housing, I believe, also. This was a cooperative movement.
Mm-hmm. All over.
All over
the South,
even in other countries.
Sure,
yeah. Still a great
idea. Not new, not at all new.
No,
the movement just thought that it was a very good way of helping people economically.
It was.
And giving them training to do something, you know,
absolutely
useful to make money with. So it, you know, there's nothing wrong with co-ops, but
no.
This country is really a contradiction as far as them saying they support the co-op movement and they're not really giving any sustenance to it when it needed help.
No, you're right.
That's about the story of the cooperative movement here in the United States. But, and then some of the co-ops that still exist have become very capitalistic, in fact, right?
Oh, yes. Not in Mississippi.
All over this country.
But are there still co-ops in Mississippi?
There are a few.
A few?
Yeah, there are not many.
The agriculture or farming?
Most of them died on the vine for lack of resources.
Quilting co-op?
There may be one or two quilting co-ops. There's some in Alabama that are rather famous, right? And they've sold their quilts all over. We have some of the quilts in the museum. We hang them, for display. Yeah. But anyhow, what did you do? You went back to what?
Back to Mississippi or back to New York?
I'm not sure. You have training sessions in the South.
I went back to Mississippi as needed.
If
Jesse needed me, I would go back. I helped Abby Hoffman set up Liberty House here. Uh-huh. That was the outlet store.
Mm.
And that did pretty well for a while.
Set up Liberty House in New York?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, talk.
I have some of the... This is our first Liberty Outlet House catalog.
Okay. Hold it for the camera to see. Say what it is.
This is the first catalog for the Liberty House Outlet Store, and it has some of the clothing that some of the co-ops made. And here has the leather things, which I've mainly been talking about. This is one of the leather saddle bags. This is a men's hip pouch that's worn on a belt, suede bag. And this is a suede hat. And here we have the belts.
Did you ever come to the Delta? Greenville? Cleveland?
Driving through, but not
spent any time. Stop.
No, with the medical committee, I think we stopped at different places. But
mm-hmm.
We didn't spend that much time in the Delta now.
Okay. You never went to Mumbai, the health center? The medical committee?
If I did, I probably did. That was like short, one
short
day
trips.
Here, one day there, and it wasn't for an extended period of time.
Okay.
I was just there for 2 or 3 weeks, actually.
Who was the head of the medical committee in Mississippi when you were there?
Dr. A psychiatrist.
Oh, in Harvard?
In Harvard.
What's his name?
Right. A, B, C, D, P.
No. Can't think of it right away. I'll think of it.
With glass, I can see him. Mm-hmm. He drove me once for miles into Jackson.
Short, brown-skinned fellow.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been at Harvard for a number of years.
And he's a psychologist.
He's a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're going to interview her tonight?
Who?
Phyllis Cunningham?
Yes, right.
Yes.
I was trying to think of
the doctor. Terrible.
Yeah.
It's okay. It'll come to me.
Well, it'll come to me. I'm sorry. I'm having a senior moment, I guess. I must be tired.
After that, I just came back to New York and did what I did.
You didn't go back to Mississippi at all?
No.
No. And when's the last time you've been there?
1965.
65?
Mm-hmm.
You left in 65 and never went back?
I never went back. I went to a SNCC reunion in 75, I think it was.
Mm.
So, that was in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And the people I've kept in touch with from those days are Helen O'Neill, who's from Clarksdale.
Mm.
We're very close. I don't know if you know Helen. Do you know
Helen? Yes, I've met her.
She lives in Ohio now, Yellow Springs. I'm in touch with her.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people I see again, Jim Foreman, I was in touch with him.
Mm-hmm.
He passed recently.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. Harriet Tans, you knew Harriet?
I'm in touch with Harriet, calls me all the time.
She goes, this is good.
Frequently.
Mm-hmm.
From Mississippi.
From Mississippi. Yes, she's in Jackson.
I know. And mm-hmm. Or when she's in New York, she calls me also.
Okay. And what did you think about your experience? Now, don't be like Barbara and start telling stories as soon as they turn off the recorder. That's not nice. I would like to hear the stories on the tape.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, I can't think of it.
Shadrach did. Did you know Shadrach?
Shadrach Meshach?
Dave.
Oh,
that's
Shadrach.
The Davis that was trying
Shadrach
to think.
Shadrach Davis. No, I didn't know.
You didn't know? I mean, Holmes County.
No. That's Crook Davis, the two doctors.
I think
could,
that
could be.
It should have been the same person, Shadrach. Is she gone?
Yeah, Barbara.
Is she gone? Oh, okay.
I'll ask her later.
Ask her if it was Shadrach she was talking about.
But my house in New York is also known as like the New York Freedom House because everyone that came through from Mississippi
came by your house?
Came, stayed at my house.
Yeah, she was. I never. I came through all the time.
You did?
You never invited me to your house. I don't understand that. I feel left out.
One day someone called, I said, this is after Len had left. He had moved to California. And someone called and said, we're coming up with a group of students, I forget from where, what town, and there are 22 of them, and they all have to stay together. Can we stay at your house? And I said, the hotel is closed. And then he said, well, we can't split them up. I said, you're not going to find anyone in New York. So I said, okay, bring them over.
Oh, my
and
Lord.
And they slept all over the floor.
I can imagine.
And then I actually did find an apartment. Someone had an apartment that they could all stay together.
Mm.
They moved out, but they stayed there for a week.
Well, I guess. Yeah. I guess that became untenable after a while.
But my experience in Mississippi was, in 64 was...
You were there during the summer project?
Yes, I was there.
Where were you during the summer project?
That's when I went down with the National
McCombs?
Council of Churches. No, I was in Jackson during
oh,
the
in
summer
Jackson.
Project.
Oh, okay.
That's when, that was a very scary time. Very unsettling time.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Civil rights
I was there when they had found the bodies.
Yeah. Wearing a Goodman and Jane.
But the openness and the compassion and love that the people and they're sharing their homes with us was just unbelievable. They just took us in and shared whatever they had. I remember when I first went to Milestone with Barbara, Will Bacon said, you have to stay at my house. And he had just been thrown off a plantation, and he just lived in this, I think like a one-room shack, and he had a big family. And we got there, and we said, you know, where are we going to stay? And he gave us his bed.
This was in Milestone?
In Milestone, just outside of Milestone.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it was just for the night, but I mean, we felt really...
Did you go to Chula? You remember Chula?
I remember Chula, but I have no real memories of Chula. Because I was not in Milestone.
No.
I was not in Milestone as much as...
That's not good for the tape.
No, that's not good for the
You remember Milestone, but you have no remembrance of Milestone.
Chula.
That's
not memories like Barb. No, it's not good for the tape. You can erase that.
Okay. Any activities that you recall that impressed you, all right, during that, you were there for relatively a brief time, right?
I was there for a longer time than 65.
Oh, you stayed longer in 65 than you did in 64.
Mm-hmm.
So after the summer of 64, you went home and came back?
I went back in 65 for the co-op. For the workshop.
Okay, and was that when you went to Mount Beulah? When you went back?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that was
okay.
65.
All right. And do you remember Al Winham? He was the director of Mount Beulah in 1965. Reverend Al Winham, he and his wife?
Mm-hmm.
You don't remember? Okay. Who do you remember? Do you remember the Head Start being organized?
They were organizing that, and I remember the printer, CDG Kirksey.
Henry
Kirksey. Henry
Kirksey
was
yes,
the printer.
God bless him.
I
he's still 87 years old, 88.
I remember him, and he was doing the printing there. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of memories.
Uh-huh. Help yourself. Remember a few. Hmm? You stayed how long in Mount Beulah?
Maybe about a month.
Mm-hmm. Gene Phillips?
Oh, yes.
Maria Coleman?
Gene Phillips, I remember.
Gene was the secretary, and so was Bertie. Bertie Coleman was the secretary, yeah. Mm-hmm. Gene is still in Jackson. Works for the federal government.
So when I left Montpelier,
Burnett
when
Jacobs,
I
you remember Burnett?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? He was the manager of the grounds. You don't remember Jacobs?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And mainly don't
remember Bob Beach?
Bob Beach?
Mm-hmm. He was an expert.
No.
Harry was in Macomb, Beach was in Hattiesburg, I was in Cleveland, Rin's father was in Madison County, etc. Warren McKenna was, Warren was in Greenville, he was in Mount Beulah, he was in Jackson when it first opened up. When we first
this
opened up
the
office.
This is with the Delta
Ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mainly dealt with Jesse.
Maybe
Jesse, Doris Derby, but Jesse was my main contact in Mississippi.
Okay.
And during this period.
Well, Jesse is still there.
And here, of course, Ellen Maslow was head of the office here.
Mm-hmm.
Does Jesse have any of these papers?
I don't know what Jesse has because he won't show them to me. I was supposed to interview Jesse and then he changed his mind.
He mentioned it.
And we'll talk to him.
Yeah. Maybe he'll change it again.
Well, it's possible.
These are really just press things.
Mm-hmm. Could I take a look at them
absolutely,
when you have time?
Absolutely.
If you have time for me to look?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And what did you think about your experience in Mississippi?
I felt it was a continuing affirmation of all of my experiences.
Mm-hmm. And that
and
being?
And that continues today.
Mm-hmm. And how does it manifest itself?
I'm very active in my community today. Mm-hmm. On the community board, on the hospital board, deal with housing, on the housing.
What part of the city?
Lower East Side.
Lower East Side.
On the waterfront committee, on the parks committee, on the human services committee. I'm involved.
Okay. And any of your family members survived?
Mm-hmm. Parents, no.
Yeah.
My brother and my sister.
They're both alive?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where are they?
My sister lives up in Harbor Springs, Michigan, northern Michigan.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And my brother lives in Bloomfield Hills.
Where?
Bloomfield Hills. Michigan.
Oh, Bloomfield.
It's a suburb of Detroit.
Yeah, I've been there. And your brother does what?
He's a lawyer.
Oh, he's a lawyer.
Semi-retired.
Okay. And you're in touch with, from the old days, today?
Harriet, Helen O'Neill, Dinky, Phyllis Cunningham,
Phyllis.
Marilyn Lowen, you're going to be interviewing her later.
Yeah.
She lives in my neighborhood.
Okay. Did you know Zelma, Dottie?
Yes. Not real well, but I see her usually annually at Dinky's. We usually have a party.
Tell me a story. About you, out of your experience, out of your... Your SNCC experience? Give me a story. You won't ever let me look at it.
I'll tell you a story.
Yeah.
I can't think of one right now.
You can't think of a cheap order one. Right after she got off of the camera.
Probably I will too.
Oh, you ladies, boy, I don't know what to do. And well, what did you think? What did you get out of an experience in the movement in Mississippi in that time? Or what did you put in? Well, I know what you put in, because you helped the people understand how to work with their hands.
I think I put my life in, you know, I was willing to put my life in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Why did you get involved?
I believe, it was
you didn't have
the
to.
Right, no, I had to. I did have.
Why did you feel that?
Because my feelings were so strong that what was going on in this country was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And anything we could do to change it.
Well, that applies to today.
I know, I'm still going on. I've marched in all the anti-war demonstrations.
Yeah.
Iraq demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
Still going on today, right? The struggle continues. It hasn't stopped.
Okay. And what about change? You helped to bring about change in your experience, and certain changes were made for a lot of people in the lifestyle in the South, the involvement of black people in the political process, be it good or bad. It happened. Yeah. Improvement.
Very important things.
Some improvement in public education, and then some great disappointments about the continued segregation of children in the public school.
Mm-hmm.
That continues.
Everywhere, I'm going to say right here.
Sure.
And we're
there
still,
was a
we're
war
still
then,
fighting for that.
War
there.
Huh?
It was a war.
So we're always at war. Yeah.
I think my father was in the First World War, my brother was in the Second World War.
Mm.
My husband was in the Korean War.
Mm.
I'm a member of the community board. One of my fellow members is 53 years old, the grandmother. She's in Iraq.
One of your fellow
community board members.
Community board.
She was in the National Guard.
Oh.
53-year-old grandmother. Yep. She was ready to get out in August, and they said no.
Frozen.
Yeah. She's gone. She's there. I mean,
how long
she's
been
staying
there?
Hmm?
Do you know how long she's been there?
Overseas? 6 months.
6 months.
Mm-hmm.
You hear from her?
No. No one says.
Nobody says.
The people in the church say that they have, you can write to her with a P.O. box, or you have to write to the army base or something. You can't write.
Directly to her?
It doesn't go right to her, right?
Mm.
You can write to her, but I haven't talked to anyone in the church.
Mm.
We did get one message that she's there.
Yeah. And you knew her from when? How do you know her?
She's from my community. She's goes to a church in my community. She works at the hospital in my community.
Mm.
And she's on the community board with me.
What is the community board?
The community board is a group of people appointed by the borough president and council members, and there are community boards in each district throughout
of the borough?
City, of the borough.
Of the borough or of the city?
Of the borough.
Of the borough.
Of the borough. And we deal with issues affecting our community.
Mm.
Housing, things that come up, parks, transportation. It changes if people want to build. There's a ULURP process, where it's a land use process. Things are put before the board before things are actually done. And we have a vote, although it isn't binding, but people, they do need the community board approval. And this is to have approval of the people in the community. And we also deal with the community at large and let them speak out on issues to see what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And it has some... doesn't have final say on things, but it can influence some things. It can have a positive influence, hopefully.
Oh, Lord. So where are we headed?
Where are we headed?
Yeah. You have an idea?
Do I have an idea?
Of course you do. You have an opinion, I think.
I don't know. I see both sides. Sometimes I...
Oh, you can see both sides.
I see.
Beautiful.
I see, well, this looks good. I meet young people that are doing well, that are...
Materially?
Not materially. That their heads on straight and their spirit's in the right place. And
oh, good.
They give me hope for the future.
They give you hope.
They do give me hope. then I see the material aspect and the commercial aspect of what's going on.
Then you see children starving and people dying.
Heartbreaking.
Here and over there.
Right out here. You don't have to go to Haiti or to...
Then you see young people going to those...
I see young people that don't vote. I have...
With a uniform on, that the man tells them to go fight for your, for our freedom.
Right.
It's a tragedy.
It is a tragedy.
Yeah.
It's a big tragedy.
It's a human tragedy. And you see children hungry.
You know, you thought when in Mississippi people were... that was a war, too.
Of a sort. Mm-hmm. Did we win?
We won something.
Some battle. I don't think we won the war.
We didn't win the war.
I think we won some battles, maybe. Yes. A few. Yeah. And by and large, there were a lot of things we didn't do that we should have done. Right?
What can we do about? I don't know about people.
Teach?
Teach. Teach, yeah. Definitely teach. Reach out, teach.
Speak out. A lot of people don't want to speak up because they're paralyzed by fear. Fear paralyzes.
A lot of people don't know. On election day last year, I was at the library checking for books out, and I said to the clerk, oh, don't forget to vote. And she said, I don't vote.
Who's that?
The librarian. A young woman, a college graduate.
I don't vote.
What is there to vote for? That's what she said. I said, well, for the honor of... I couldn't wait to register to vote. When I was 21, it was the first thing I did the day after I turned 21, to register to vote. I have never missed an election. She has never voted in an election.
She's never voted.
Never voted.
How old a woman is
it? Young. Yeah. 22. 21, 22. Yeah. You can vote at 18 now.
Sure. Yeah. And you...
She didn't know that women couldn't vote years ago, black people couldn't vote. She knows the history.
She doesn't know.
She does know the history.
Oh, she does know.
Yes, she knows. I told her.
Oh, you told her.
She
didn't know before you told her.
No, she had to know that.
Say what people had to know.
Well, I mean, she's graduated from college. She doesn't know.
Well,
that.
She should have known.
She should have known.
Yes.
But what is she doing? There's a lot of work to be done.
Absolutely. And the other generation coming along. Other couple of generations, do they have what it takes to take up the sword, so to speak, and continue the struggle, do you think?
A few, yes. Not enough.
A few. Well, that in itself is frightening, if it's only a few.
I can't really answer that. I would hope that they could.
A lot of kids going down the tube. Mm-hmm. Huh?
A lot. And where are they going? Where's the work? And where's the meaning also if there is work? What kind of work? A lot of materialistic things are different than when we were young. If you had one pair of shoes, that's good, right?
Yeah. I get it.
Did you have a refrigerator? Did you have a telephone?
Yeah, I didn't have a refrigerator when I grew up.
I didn't have
it. Didn't have a car. Never had a car.
Never had a car.
No?
Never had a car.
Never at all.
Didn't have a telephone, I guess.
Didn't have a bicycle until I was about 17 or 18. Nothing. No. And I had to buy my own.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I wasn't in the South.
No. You're in Boston,
yeah? Yeah, in Boston. Absolutely. Yeah, but then again, I listened to some good people who came through,
mm-hmm.
right? Some good people, boys, Mary McLeod,
Ella Baker,
good people,
very good people.
But who's teaching now? Who's coming through? Who's speaking out?
Can't
make anything. Yeah, that's not good. It should be able to fall off your tongue,
mm-hmm.
given all that we have.
Maybe the local minister gives a good sermon. He might be speaking out to
the local
the congregation.
Unless Bush has got a hold of them.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
Huh? Well.
Okay. Okay, I have no story.
Hmm?
I have no story.
You had enough.
I have enough.
Sure you have. You had enough, Miss Nancy Rose. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.